Hello and welcome to the Rengineering YouTube and podcast. I'm Paul, your host. This podcast is all about Porsche and their cars and the people and the technology and the engineering that goes behind it. You'll find your Porsche stories, which is us, me, talking to you about your Porsche, your journeys and your life experiences with those cars. Tech Talk, which is all about the technical aspects of Porsche. Waffle, which is just me whittering on about basically anything with some friends. And Heritage, which looks at the entire journey of Porsche from the earliest days to the present day. If that sounds interesting to you, then stick around. Welcome back to the Rengineering YouTube and podcast, and welcome to episode 37. And it's a waffle episode. So if you love these waffle episodes, and I know some of you do, please let me know. What else is it that you're interested in, the discussions and the just random chat that happens? Particularly interested if you, what your preference is, if you're really enjoying the tech talks, not enough of those coming out, but they are on their way, or the heritage episodes, so more about people's sort of long-term ownership proposition and where they came from, or the your Porsche stories, and whether you're interested in the short bite-sized stuff, unless it's Michael Lindsay, in which case we've got an hour and a half. That's an episode for you back. So this week then, so there is a few, you know, a little bit to get through actually, to talk to you about. So it's been a big one really. I guess one of the biggest, I'm not sure if it was a leak, but it wasn't a press conference. The 911-992 is going hybrid. So that's interesting. The Taycan Turbo GT, and that lapping the ring in 7 minutes, 7 seconds. What does that mean? Some conversation here about Landau laps. So that's the collecting cars circuit of basically Chris Harris nailing cars around Landau in Wales. And that was the 4RS versus this SL63 convertible. Very strange matchup. Had some interesting feedback and movement on the Ren 550. So I'm going to cover that. Gunther Works lapping records in their 993 at Willow Springs. And a bit on marketing, and then I guess probably the sweet spot for me this week, the interesting kind of quite exciting stuff for me. There's other stuff that's exciting as well, but this one's particularly because I'm a watch nerd, and my purchase of a replacement for my Porsche Chronograph 1 that I owned, finally wrapping up on Caffeine and Machine. But, and then after that, there's a little bit of a tour around with me and my mates walking around Bicester Heritage at a, one of those lovely Bicester scrambles. So let's get into the episode then. So the 992, what does it mean that the fact that the 992 is going hybrid? I think I've thought about this for a little while now. These decisions aren't made overnight, right? So if you think back to some of the legislation that was coming out globally, really, but particularly in this country, obviously in the UK, if you first time listener of the podcast, but actually standing up and producing and designing powertrains and something that's transferable, that would have been in progress for years to get to the point. So for me, if you think about the longevity of the 911, I mean, it's core to the brand, it's never going to go anywhere. I think others may come and go. It's potentially possible that a Taycan will exist long term. I've got a bit of a question mark over that, really. Panamera, I think, is another one. I think they'll continue on with this kind of executive saloon, but what that looks like in the future. But the 992 is heading into the .2, but ultimately the 911's existed for decades and decades and decades. It's core to the value of the brand. Without the 911, Porsche pretty much doesn't exist. But this is the first time, it's probably the first time since moving from air-cooled to water-cooled, that we've got that next step change again in terms of what the powertrain is. If you think about how significant that change is, so I don't know, what, 30 something years of it being air-cooled and then moving into the water-cooled phase, and you know, people look really wistfully back at the air-cooled cars, right? You know, if you look at even the 903, probably for me the least loved version, unless it's an RS, but I think G-bodies and, you know, and early stuff, you know, they're held on a pedestal, and rightly so, because they, you know, that's where For decades, they broadly went unchanged. You know, you can move parts. If you didn't know, if you're listening to this and you're fairly new to Porsche in general, you could move body parts and, you know, mechanical parts around from sort of the early 70s stuff all the way through to the 90s. You know, they were that kind of consistent in the delivery and the makeup of those cars that they really didn't change. You're moving into the sort of 996 generation, so late 90s, 97, 98, and those cars went water cooled for the first time, and there was a massive change because obviously the 911 at that point had gone from being something that was, you know, like as I said, basically the same silhouette for decades, and then moved into the 996 and it looked radically different and was met with both criticism and excitement because it meant what does this new direction for Porsche look like? Well, bring us to the modern day. We're in that situation again where the 992 is heading with a new hybrid powertrain, and that is the next generation. That's the next move. Do I think we'll ever see a fully electric 911? No, I think this is probably Porsche's way of handling that move. I've sort of not held back before about my feelings around electrification of cars, and I think there's a place for it for sure, but you know, ultimately it's not the solution that we're really looking for sports cars, especially if we can avoid that and actually be carbon neutral and actually look at the entire end-to-end cradle to grave of all manufactured vehicles. That is where the big gains are to be had, and including then the operating of those cars. So I don't know. I think it'd be interesting to see how the public receive that car. It'd be interesting to see, because obviously we've got the Boxster and the Cayman that are coming out. They're going to be electric as well next. You know, the question really remains is, does that signal the end of RS cars in general being combustion-based cars? Is there going to be a hybrid powertrain for those cars going forward as well, which would mean the 992.1 is the last RS 911 with a fully combustion powertrain. So I guess until there's more meat on the bone for everybody to learn and find out, and Porsche put a proper full release out, then we're gonna have to wait and see. But I don't know, I it makes me happy that I've got one of those cars that sits before that, you know, before even turbo cars, because the 718 generation, so if you're new, I have a 981 generation Porsche Cayman, which really was the last you obviously had the GTS 4-liter, which was the very last of the six cylinder cars, but that are non-RS, but otherwise you're looking at RS only, and GT4, and then anything below that, and even all sort of cooking car, it was all been turboed from 2017 onwards. So that's a long time now. And then you think about the next iteration of those cars, they're going to be all electric, and then the 911 going hybrid. The sound difference, like I said lots of times in the past, my experience with cars and my love of those cars is based around the connection you have with them, which for me is oral. I get an absolute love of the volume, the noise, the feel, the vibration through the car. It's really, and I noticed it because I had a 991.2 911 Carrera T for a very brief period of time. And that, with the 3-litre twin turbo, really was noticeable, the absence of kind of really visceral noise, because and I have heard Akrapovich exhaust versions of those cars, but anything that's high, heavily turboed, it mutes it so much that for me, really after that, those turbo cars, incredibly efficient and powerful, there's no question there's a huge power change between the two, they lose something for me, right? So I guess what I'm worried about is the hybridization of those cars, those 911s, moving again into that space of just it's the turboed ones lost something, and then I worry about the hybrid ones losing something again. I think reality is they're going to be so out of my price range, and probably for a lot of people, because if you look at the prices of them, they're well over £100,000 in the UK, $130,000, $140,000. That's a lot of money. And then when you're in a kind of challenging financial market, it makes it quite elusive to be able to attach yourself to something like that will make that buy. So yeah, maybe it's not even relevant to me. Maybe it's not even relevant to the general public, which, and it kind of pushes that Porsche into that potentially a market choice of wanting to mix it up with the likes of Ferrari more than, you know, it's an everyday car. You can jump in these cars, they're designed to be used. And I think Pruniger would say, Andreas Pruniger would say, you can jump in any of these cars and drive them all year round in any conditions. That's kind of what they're designed for. But it's hard to kind of see that significance with the fact that they're going to be priced out and you know, much quieter and much sort of a GT car rather than a sports car. So let me know. I'd love to hear what you're thinking about this stuff and whether you don't care, whether you're deeply passionate about and you're outraged about the fact that 911s are going to go hybrid. You can drop me an email if you're interested and chat with me over email, info@reengineering.com, or ping a message over and DM me on Instagram at reengineeringuk. So that's 902. Taycan Turbo. So yeah, kind of it's a nice dovetail really into Taycan Turbo. I mean, this, we're in the Turbo GT. I mean, the name is ridiculous, isn't it? Taycan Turbo GT. I guess that we're talking about now the fact that they've moved that model for the first time into the GT products line. And this is the bit I don't get, is you've now got a Taycan. It's a executive saloon. And I got the Turbo and the Turbo S. That kind of made sense to me. I don't like the badging, the name Turbo, but okay, fair enough. Ridiculously fast all around. Even the S is fast, so Turbo S is ridiculous. But now they've gone and cleared the back seats out, put a roll cage in it, and taken it around the Nürburgring in a extraordinary time, really, if you think about the Rimac. You know, it's within half a second of the Rimac, which is, you know, that's not a saloon, that's a hypercar. So 7 minutes, 7 seconds around the Nordschleife. Yeah, it's ballistically quick. But really, what does it mean? I don't know. It's, again, one of those cars that's going to be for... This is the tricky bit, right? GT cars are typically sold out before they even hit the showrooms. Big, long list of people always going to preferential clients. There's been YouTube videos that have been incredibly successful in the last couple of months about, you know, it's a joke trying to get one of those cars and you've got to buy a million of, you know, cooking cars. You've got to have six McCanns to get one GT car, and even that's not a guarantee. But I don't know if this is going to be the same with the Taycan. You know, like, they're really not doing well. You know, there's still loads of them sat around on forecourts. They're not particularly loved or wanted. Yeah, they're a great tax write-off if you own your own business, but it kind of extends to the end of that, really, that period of, you know, where you've got an opportunity to upgrade again, and they just sit around on the second-hand market. Is this going to be any different? It's probably going to be more attractive, but I don't know. I think people are still going to be in the same boat for me. So my expectation is when this car launches to the public for sale, I'm going to go for it here. I'm going to say that they sell, but they don't clear out the decks. And I think you'll see people initially punching for big overs, and they'll kind of try for those big numbers that, you know, 3 RSs have, you know, achieved before. But actually, I think after that initial wave, it'll settle back down and it'll just be a case of, it's another Taycan sat on the forecourt, you know, pretty punchy, but yeah, so ballistic around the Nordschleife, but, you know, for me personally, little relevance, and I don't think it's going to make a huge difference to the brand in general. What else then? So yeah, weird one, Lando Laps, right? I love watching Lando Laps. Again, if you're in the UK, you'll know all about Chris Harris from Top Gear, and, you know, potentially if you're out of the UK but you know of Chris Harris, it'll be from Top Gear. But that's not where he started. He's a journalist. He's been a journalist in the UK for a long time and had Harris Drives on YouTube, really successful, really, some, even the older stuff's really good still. But they've got this thing where they drive around a circuit in South Wales called Llandow, or Llandow if you're Welsh, and yeah, match cars up that are fairly, you know, good and comparable. This one was so weird. So Spider RS versus a Mercedes SL63 or AMG convertible. I mean, you've got a 2-ton, 500 brake horsepower beast versus four-wheel drive, obviously, versus a Spider RS. And this was in the wet, right? So long story short, the SL63 absolutely minced the Spider RS. Grip absolutely everywhere, ballistically fast. You even saw the launch and you thought, wow, that is deeply impressive. But Mercedes have never really resonated with me massively. And in fact, when we come onto it in a minute, you'll hear some good old-fashioned waffle of us walking around Bicester Heritage. My cousin Nick is on that. He will love the SR63. He'll be all over it. So it'd be fascinating to get his take on it. But, you know, again, it goes back to that same thing of what are these cars for. The Spider RS, you know, people have said already, and it's pitched at, it's a road car. It's a very fast, very optimized for sort of borderline racetrack use, but it's still a road car. Not as quick as an SL63 around a circuit, which is a big fat convertible. But what would you take? You know, given the choice between the two, if the budgets kind of allow you to make one of those choices, they look fantastic as well, the Spider RS. So yeah, weird matchup, but yeah, fun watch as well. So if you get 15 minutes, I think it is, go and give that a watch on YouTube. And then wrapping up really this kind of sort of what's going on in the industry at the moment, Gunther Works have produced their latest iteration. Now, if you don't know who Gunther Works are, there's an episode back at Festival of Speed. It's probably episode 10 or 12 or something like that of the podcast. Go and listen to that. And I interview the global market. I've got to get this right. Global marketing and client liaison manager. There you go. Something like that anyway. About Gunther Works, and they had their turbo there that they were just about to release. I think it's 2022 Festival of Speed. It must have been. No, 2023 Festival of Speed. And I was really amazed, actually. I was fascinated by their commitment to the client experience, and I've kind of got a loose invite to go out and see them and spend some time with them. Very loose. And I really want to do that when I get over to the States. Not going to happen this year, sadly. But that car, right? So it's amazing. That's based off a 993 generation 911. And it's lapping Willow Springs at the lap record, which I find absolutely bonkers. You wouldn't think at this stage there's any development left in that car, that they had absolutely optimized it to the nth degree. And yet they're still finding pace out of it, which is incredible. I mean, it's huge power. The, you know, wheel width is like 11, 12 inches at the front and 13 inches at the back or something ridiculous like that anyway. And they're now going to Laguna Seca, one of my absolute all-time favorite circuits. It's a bucket list item for me to drive that circuit. Not a pace. I just want to go around there. And that's pretty much mostly from Gran Turismo days back in the 90s of, you know, Gran Turismo 1, I'm on about, or 2, and starting to lap that circuit. And it just becomes iconic, especially with that corkscrew. I forget who's the main sponsor now, but yeah, an amazing circuit. So congratulations to Gunther Works for achieving that. Tomorrow, I'm off to Caffeine and Machine in Hampshire. So the Hut, it's the third launch of Caffeine and Machine's effectively home. I'm so excited about that. I guess for me, I mean, I have this is how much I love the place and love the brand, and identify myself as like a real kind of key part of the demographic for that. I had my stag do. I had a very small stag do, but I had my stag do at Caffeine and Machine, and then we went and camped. You know, a load of us guys got you know, some crappy tents, sat around a fire, smoking some terrible meat on the barbecue, just ripping the piss out of me basically for the evening, which I loved. And I came away though, but that place in Stratford upon Avon is 3 hours thing from me, so it's an all day round trip just to go for an hour or so. Now, with this place opening, it's 20 minutes away. So yeah, if you're there, I've got a ticket for tomorrow, the soft launch tomorrow. So I'll see Phil McGovern and the rest of the team at the Hut, Caffeine Machine, the Hut. I've got day tickets for Saturday lunch as well. So if you're by any chance listening to this and it's a Thursday, these always go out on a Thursday, and you're at Caffeine Machine on Saturday, I'll inevitably be wearing Rengineering branded jacket or something like that, and you'll be able to, you know, pick me out, I'm sure. The Outlaw Cayman will be there as well, so if you want to check out my car, my modified Porsche Cayman, it'll be there for you to have a look at as well, and I can talk you around what I've done so far and what I'm planning to do or what's coming up in the next couple of months. But I will be there regularly, and I'll probably be doing a fair few of these podcast episodes and using it as a sort of meeting ground really for your Porsche stories or heritage episodes as well. So going, it's a great location actually for driving out. So, a really good opportunity if you're interested in being on the channel for a full heritage episode. If you've got a really impressive beautiful car with a great story, then get in touch and we can set a full heritage episode and I come to you or meet somewhere central and we do a full interview, 45 minute interview, and then a drive out as well. If you're not necessarily located near me though and you want to be on the channel, you can absolutely do that on a Your Porsche Story. There's loads of those, go and check them out in the playlist so far, and you can have a listen to some of those and get a feel for it. But that doesn't have that, it's anything to do with Porsche. That could be you're looking for your first Porsche and you want to have a conversation about it, all the way through to you've spent decades owning various different ones and sort of talking about it. It'd be more of a heritage episode. But yeah, loads of opportunity for you. If you want to do that, info@rengineering.com or head over to Insta at rengineeringuk. One last bit before we get into Bista though, and that is for me, oh no, two bits. So one quick bit, but one kind of more in depth actually. And that is I might have a little tickle of a sponsorship deal on the go. One of the things that's really held up, and I've known it's going to be a kind of drawback limitation shortcoming of getting started in something like this without kind of being particularly known in social media or have a sort of presence out there, is achieving a level of sponsorship that will support the build of a Ren 550, which is my big project, really. It's the channel's big project that I want to launch. Still working on on a really good launch video, so you'll be able to go and have a watch and I can talk you through everything that's planned for that car. But it starts with a donor car, and that donor car way back was potentially going to be a VW Beetle, because lots of these 550 Spider recreations are based off of a Beetle chassis, before I realized that, and ultimately you can develop that as much as you like, but they're really still going to be a fundamentally floppy, flawed car. And then I thought, well, looked at sort of the dimensions and thought, what is comparable in size? And also it was kind of, I had a bit of an epiphany and thought, well, actually the Lotus Elise Exige chassis and footprint is basically identical to a 550 Spider. So stir the pot together and that's what you get. You get a release chassis, air-cooled engine, carbon fiber bodied 550 Spider super project. Every single part of that will be shown on YouTube, so all the way through from design to production to test to finish, the whole lot, every single episode, and you'll get to see everything all the way through. Naturally, you even just saying that, you go, wow, that's expensive. Exactly that. But it starts really for me with the purchase of a donor. So that's the conversation I've got. I've got a booked meeting next week with a company. I won't share anything about that company until we wrap it up. But if that happens, we're off, guys. This is it. I'm going on a purchasing hunt to go and get that car. And then we can really get started. So at that point, it'll be guns blazing. I can't wait. If that doesn't happen though, because these, I've had probably two or three of these conversations where it looks like a sponsor is going to come through, and then they've either offered to part sponsor or they've offered collaboration, but in terms of the funding, it's been limited because it does need funding, financial funding. So I'll hold off for now. If you're interested though in being a sponsor yourself, you're listening to this and thinking actually the brand aligns to your thinking and your structure and what you're looking for in terms of promotion for the next few years, do get in touch, info@rengineering.com. Finally though, before we get into walking around Bista Heritage, I had, when was it, 3 years ago, a Porsche Design Chronograph 1. If you don't know what that is, it's a watch. It's also the first ever black watch that was created. And it was from the design house, and that was basically Ferry Porsche and his brother Hans Peter founded that company in 1972. And out of that design house came a number of products, basically. Ran alongside the main Porsche brand, but they produced initially the Chronograph 1, which is the first chronograph movement Porsche ever put into a watch. And then produce that, and it's iconic. You will know it, even if you don't recognize it, you'll know it from Top Gun. It's the watch that Maverick wears in Top Gun, and then obviously Top Gun Maverick as well. is, you know, it's an absolute icon. I had one of those, and not only did I have just a random one, but I had one that had been owned by, I can't believe I'm going to say this out loud, by a Porsche factory employee. It came with his original business card, box, papers in beautiful condition, worn, so it had some patina on it, and I paid £800 in the UK for it. And then I think, I can't remember what it was. I was in the middle of kind of buying and selling some watches because I'm a massive watch nerd. And for some reason, and I cannot even remember which watch I sold it for, but I sold that watch. I did, obviously, you know, I sold it for more than £800, but really before Top Gun Maverick came out, and it kind of really stoked the fire for those watches. What a moron. What an absolute idiot. And it's irreplaceable, that watch. I've looked for all this time since, unable to find a watch that is comparable to the one I had. There's plenty that have popped up and gone again, but you know, they either had a Le Mania movement, which is not particularly robust, not easy to find parts for, or they had a 7750 movement, which is, I mean, that movement's a workhorse. It's been around since the 70s, and it's been it's in use today in lots of watches that you see that are chronographs that are off the shelf. And you know, it's so easily, I think they even make Chinese copies of that movement now. It's literally, it's everywhere. So that is the 7750 is a great movement, by the way. It's not a bad movement at all. It's just been around for so long that it's in use everywhere. Porsche over the years have produced other watches. So they produced the Titan, which IWC Schaffhausen were involved in producing that. They then moved from that to the Eterna brand, and then Porsche Design purchased Eterna. And at that point, they've produced all sorts of weird and wonderful things over the years. Less iconic, I think, for me, the ones that really stand out are the Titan, and that was the first titanium watch that Porsche produced. I think it was probably one of the first titanium watches ever produced. So they really were a group of, you know, it was a real first thing for Porsche, producing the first black PVD watch and the first titanium watch. And then in they've celebrated, you know, decade milestones with updates of that. So some of them have been okay. Most recently, they've produced one for the 50th anniversary. And yeah, beautiful. Really, really harks back to the original Porsche Chronograph 1. Black PVD again, and an in-house movement from memory. So, but that watch is £8,000 for that watch. So, and for me, I already have another collection, so there isn't really a place for an £8,000 watch, but I did want to try and get hold of something that was close. And they produced for the 40th anniversary a mix of the Titan and the Chronograph 1, and that was the titanium version of the Chronograph 1 with some slight differences, running that original 7750 movement. So, it's beautiful. They made 911 of those watches, and that's it. That's the lot. So they are incredibly rare across the world. I found one, and I bought one. So it doesn't look quite the same as the black PVD because it's a kind of gunmetal titanium color, but it's beautiful. It really picks up some of those design, real key design points for the original version, and then kind of there's some sort of updates, really. But yeah, it's absolutely beautiful. So very excited about getting my, what, you know, a sort of a replacement, and an almost as exclusive replacement. Ideally, I'd have loved to have had the original as well, but as I said, if it isn't as good as the one I had before, I don't really want to sort of poor repeat. It reminds me of you know, this is the first ever mid-engine car I'd had, but I had a 1988 Toyota MR2 T-bar. And stupidly as a kid nearly killed myself in that car, and then once I'd written it off and went to go and total that car, and then I went to try and find a replacement, I bought another version of it, and it was never as good. And I'm kind of worried that if I try and do the same thing with that original Chronograph one, I'll repeat the same issue of never finding another that's quite as good. So this watch I'm getting, this 40th anniversary watch, incredibly excited about. So yeah, really good. That's it, though. So I'm going to hand over to me and a bunch of idiots walking around Vista Heritage, just checking out some cars, giving some thoughts and feedback about what their favourites are, and I'll catch you back up at the end. Mr. Nick Forbes George, welcome to Rengineering Podcast. How are you, sir?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
All right, yeah.
It's a sunny day. We're in Vista. We're looking at cars. The world is a great place.
The world is a great place, and it's dried up, thankfully, because it was miserable all the way here. So.
I did enjoy a nice drive in, so I'm not complaining, although it was a little bit moist.
It was a little moist?
Yes, so I had to go a little bit steady eddy.
Yeah.
But it was, yeah, it was gorgeous. It was a nice drive in. I can't complain through the Cotswolds.
Very nice.
Yeah, it was great.
So, mate, this is your the first of your Porsche stories.
Yes.
So, let's go back to first Porsche experience. First time you ever sat in one, saw one. When was that?
So you're going to be going back to childhood, and this was cars on the wall of a typical 1980s children's bedroom. I say children's bedroom, yeah, sort of like talking 10, 11. And my mother had gone to one of the shops where they would sell framed pictures of cars. And on the framed pictures of cars, there was an F40, there was a Kawasaki Ninja, and there was a 911. So that was what was in my bedroom, and I'd look at it all the time. It was a whale tail one.
Colour, do you remember the colour?
Red.
Yeah, yep. Standard 80s red, right? Everything was black and red in the 80s.
I can remember exactly what it was, where it was in my bedroom. And that was kind of where it started. And then, I've been a car enthusiast ever since, and it was always the aspirational thing of, I set myself some goals when I was younger, probably by this point we're talking in your 20s, and one of them was Porsche by 40.
Okay.
And then in my 40th year, along came the Porsche.
So, let's track back, because that's like a condensed version of the story, but they're like, you buying that car?
So
how did that happen, mate? I know the story, but tell the listeners how
so
that worked.
So Paul and I are actually related. So we are, we're cousins, we were at a car show, so we do a lot of car shows together. And we went to Goodwood, and I at the time had a Mercedes AMG convertible that was coming to the end of its PCP lease, and it was decision time was to buy. It's a lovely car. It was new, 2018, 3 litre twin turbo, all the kit on it. Really, really great car, but relatively sensible with four seats. Now I've got four kids, so I can never take out all four of my children in this car. And to be honest with you, they never really came out in it anyway. So
no.
It was time for a fun car.
Because you've got a van that's like half van, half.
Yeah. So we've got a six.
Child transportation.
Six-seater transit van. We've got a X5 M Sport that's amazing, but it's seven-seater, so that can cart them all around as well. So whilst Paul and I are at Goodwood, I've got to the stage in my life where we can afford to do these nice things, we see a Lotus Emira.
I was going to omit this bit, but
the whole Emira thing. So we got very excited. I phoned my wife up, and it was launched with its price, and we were both sat there like, I think I can afford that. Now, I've never had a Lotus before, so I thought, I think I can afford this. So we did the numbers. Literally, me and him stood there on the back of a fag packet. Can we do it? Can we not? Phoned my wife up, said I might be buying a brand new car. She thought I was kidding. So the order went down, and boom, I'm getting a Lotus. Anyway, then it was supposed to be here last June, and they delayed that, and then the prices went up, and then I got rid of the car, and I started to get a bit itchy, and I'm like, don't really know, yeah. And then we went out in Paul's Cayman, which I had been in before, and then I actually started looking a bit more of like, I really like this. And then,
but don't, like, let's not skip the bit where, and you won't be the only person,
yeah,
looked at a Cayman without knowing too much about them, went,
a poor, yeah,
it's all right.
I
it's
didn't
okay.
want to say that. I just thought, yeah, it's a poor man's Porsche.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, it's a poor man's Porsche. But I'd never been in one. Then I went in Paul's, and I sat in it in that car park at Cotswold
Motor Hub.
Yeah, yeah, and I was like, this all looks very similar to 911 interior, and this is all. This is all very nice. Then we went out on it, and I heard the pops and the bangs and the cracks, and I was like, I love this. So The Amira was there waiting in the background, nothing coming anytime soon, promises being made. And don't get me wrong, it looked amazing. And then I started after Paul's car, I went to the Porsche dealer, walked in there, and saw a chap called Matthew Parry at Tewkesbury Porsche, who'd actually sold me my X5 from BMW. Now, I know that sometimes when people walk into these showrooms, they aren't always taken seriously. And Matt knew me, knew my character, sold me pretty cars before, and was like, "I know what you're like. If you're in here, it means you're looking."
Yeah.
He off we went, and we took out a 911, we took out a Cayman, and we took out a Boxster. I did it back to back, same road, and he knows that I like convertibles, and the Boxster was just like, "This is." Again, I didn't think I was going to like it.
Was that the one you bought, or was it a different one?
No, it was a different one.
Okay, right.
So I was like, this is a piece of me. But honestly, I thought, 2.5 litre, knew the stuff, because mine's a 718, so it's not the flat six. So I didn't think it was going to be loud enough for me, or obnoxious enough for me. So took it out, and it was amazing. Like, completely fell in love with it. I then said to Matt, right, the one they had in the showroom was silver, which wasn't me. I was like, Matt, you've got to find one that and my...
that makes you look like a massive dick.
Yep, so my thing I said to Matt was, when I drive past, people have got to think, what an a-hole.
Yeah.
So I left it with him. Matt then, 2 weeks later, phones up and sends me a video of a car. He said, right, it's bright lava orange. It's got every single... bells and whistles on it. And now one thing, I'm a bit of an audiophile, so I like the upgraded stereos and so Barrows and Wilkins, Bermista, the ones that are the stupid foreground options that he said he's never seen before on a Boxster.
Yeah.
He said it's got the Bermista stereo, it's got everything you need, everything you wanted. Sent me this
it
video.
Sounds like a sales pitch, doesn't it? Normally you'd be like, oh yeah, okay. And actually when you turn up, it's got like standard sound system, yeah. But they just want to get you through the door.
I wouldn't have taken it with the standard sound system.
Yeah, for sure.
So he... So I went down there. His parting thing with on the video was, right, here's the car. It's exactly what you want. It came in half an hour ago. It's going to sell very quickly because it's got everything on it. Phone me when you've got your card in your hand. So read the message, phoned him up. That was 12:30. By 1:30, I bought the car.
Yes. Mate, that is the fucking way to do it, right?
Yeah. Definitely, and then when I picked it up, 2 weeks, so they prepped it all for me. I said to them, I want the registration plate take off the front so I can put a sticky one on there for my own plate. And the way that Porsche Tewkesbury made me feel, bearing in mind that I was buying a second-hand Boxster, so this isn't the top of the top of the tree, they made me feel like I was buying a £300,000 Porsche.
Yeah, mate, that's
very special. Everything was amazing about it. It was in the showroom and it looked brand new.
Yeah.
It pops, it cracks, it does everything I want it to. And I knew it was going to be quick. I didn't think it was going to be quite as quick as it is.
Mm.
And actually now take it out, and the more I've got to know it and the more I can push it and the more I'm like, it is really quick. It's up there with, it's just behind the 911. It's so much fun. It's the price point for it, for it was perfect for me as well. I'm not a millionaire, but I feel $1 million when I'm driving it.
Yeah,
and this has always been mine and Paul's mantra, is the smile on my face can't get any bigger if I'm in this car, which is just under a 50 grand car, or if I'm in a 250 grand car. I love it. The colour's great. I'm super proud of it. And it's just, it's at the moment. Recently, I got asked back to Porsche, had the car for a year. Matt says, come back in, we've got some stuff here for you, let's go and have a look. There's a couple of 911s, there's some more convertibles, let's see we can, there's loads of equity, your car's worth what you paid for it last year,
right?
So do you want to go up a level? So I went in there with a completely open mind. I took out a 911 again, and of course it was more money, and everything in it was just very similar to where I was, but just more money. So I was, for once, and anybody tell you I generally jump through my cars relatively quickly, I was, no, I'm staying with this.
It's mad, isn't it?
I'm going to stick with it. It's the last, as we know, the Porsche calling an end to production of the 718, so this will be the last of their petrol-driven, small, mid-engine cars. My only thing I might do is I might order another one, ready just to have the last of the last before it goes. by that point, I'm around 42 now, and just to do me for another few years. But it's a great car. Every time I look at it, I'm super proud of it. It gets the pops and the bangs, and people love it. And people love it when they see it. I get loads of compliments about it, and I'm very happy. I mean, as we're stood here now, you can't see what we can see. There's hypercars everywhere. There's an old DB5 that's probably worth a couple of million quid
at
next
least,
to us. In a plethora of just your senses are being overcome with all these different vehicles, which are poster cars to me. But I wouldn't want to live with the way I drive mine with any of these vehicles, unless it was tucked up in a garage somewhere.
I tell you what, I've spotted one car that I would.
GT3 RS.
GT3 RS. But that's the only car in there that I can see inside, and there is some mega kit here. Nick, thanks so much for coming on the channel. I really appreciate it. And so if you want to be on Your Porsche Stories, then make sure you check back. Head over to @RengineeringUK on Instagram, and we'll catch you up for the next one. Take care. Say goodbye, Nick.
Bye-bye.
So I'm recording this before I've even gone and listened to all the absolute rubbish that me and my mates were talking about. So I can't say I hope you enjoyed that, because I've absolutely no idea whether it was any good or not. So this is editing Paul now kicking in, and I listened to the walking around Bicester Heritage, and there's basically no usable content. But what there was is the first ever Your Porsche Story with my cousin Nick and his Boxster, beautiful Boxster S. Nick has been going through a bit of a crisis with that car, actually, and I thought it's quite interesting playing it back. I'm pretty sure he'll listens to most episodes, so he gets an opportunity to kind of rediscover the reasons why, in his own voice, that car is so fantastic. So a bit of a recap for him, but also conscious that the podcast has grown so much that some of you new listeners haven't heard some of this content before. So hopefully useful for you, and that is why there's less random chatter and more of a catch up on the first ever Your Porsche Story. But I'm sure there's some pearls in there somewhere. I really hope you've had a lovely week, though. And I am working flat out on trying to produce a really good teaser trailer and some content on the Ren 550. So it's a bit silent on the YouTube channel, but it is still there. There's loads of previous episodes as well. So if you're interested in watching my Porsche story, a full 50-minute feature-length episode on me personally and my tour around the French Alps, you can go and do that. There's loads of heritage episodes with Frank Cassidy, with all sorts of different people, most recently the Moon Mars GT3, and there's loads to come. So absolutely tons of content you can already go and watch. Mixture of shorter stuff and full hour-long episodes. Pretty much all of the work I go into and put into YouTube kind of bucks the trend. I don't produce a lot of short content. That's not what my channel is about. My channel is all about kind of the long form, sit and put your feet up and watch it through. So that's just to set your expectations. For now though, that's me. I hope you have a lovely week. I hope you've got lovely things planned. As I said, I'm at Caffeine Machine this weekend, so come and say hello if you see me. But for now, I'll leave you to it. Take care, and I'll see you soon. Bye for now.